Morning. It's good to see each of you this beautiful fall day. It still feels a little bit like summertime, the warmth, but in the early mornings, we do feel some coolness in the air. So it's good to see each of you here. As Brother Ross said, October is a really full calendar for us, a busy time. A lot of opportunities to be together and in a lot of different ways. So we'd hope that you take advantage of those as you have time and opportunity to do so. Some of you may have never heard Brother Randy Wells speak. Randy's spoke here several times, something like that. But Randy always delivers great messages, and so we're in for a treat that fifth Sunday coming up. So we're looking forward to that that day. So be praying for that end. Great time to invite friends and family to come be a part of that day as well. Last Sunday, Brother John spoke on the Ten Commandments, and really was begin looking at it. The Ten Commandments are not the ten suggestions from God, but the commandments of God. God expects us to take these in and allow them to be transformative in our life. But hidden within the inherent aspect of this is that the first four commandments were really about one's relationship with God. You know, no gods before me, no graven images, don't take God's name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day and keeping it holy. And then we transition to honor your father and your mother. And then we limit, and so we have this transition sort of thinking about from God to home and then eventually to our relationship with one another. Thou shalt not covet, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, thou shalt not commit adultery. So these commandments were really a framework by which God is speaking to us because God knows what we need. And this morning we're going to sort of begin seeing what happens to the children of Israel when they do not follow what God called us to be. I like John's analogy used last week about the foundation. That these foundations, looking at God the right way, looking at yourself the right way, and look at others the right way. So these commandments become somewhat of a foundation from which we live. When our founding fathers began looking forward to how to sort of create this country and establish it to be a country that would be lasting, they turned to the Word of God, and they used this to inform them on how to create this country. And I think that what we see sometimes today is that people have sort of forgotten our foundation, and maybe it's a time for us to reexamine some of those foundational truths that we have. So Moses gets the commandments, you know, and he delivers them. And then in Exodus chapter 20, verse 18, now all the people witness the thunderings, the lightning flashes, the sound of the trumpet, and the mountain smoking. And the people saw it, they trembled and stood afar off. Then they said to Moses, you speak with us, and we will hear. But let not God speak with us, lest we die. And Moses said to the people, do not fear, for God has come to test you, that his fear may be before you, so that you may not sin. So the people stood afar off, but Moses drew near the thick darkness where God was. So there at the foot of Mount Sinai, it was a shaking and covered with a cloud. And then the people heard everything that was being said by God. And they said, listen, Moses, we just soon not talk to God directly. You go do it for us, and we'll do whatever you say. And Moses, but listen, God's not doing this to drive you away. God's doing this in order that you may not sin, that you may be transformed people who know the right moral way to be and the right moral way to look at their relationship with God, with themselves, in each other. And so, really, Moses, in his wisdom many years ago, recognized that fear-based connections are not as strong as love-based ones. That God wasn't trying to just scare the meanness out of them. God was, in a way, trying to express his love and providential care for them and the promises with them. In fact, if you look at the fifth command, God said this was a command that had a promise attached to it, that your days may be well upon the earth by honoring your father and your mother. And so the commandments were not given out of anger, but given out of love. Can you imagine a scenario like this? You know, maybe this afternoon, some of you get in the car and you've got kids and you say, okay, let's go out and get lunch today. And they're all for, hey, yeah, that's great. Okay. Where y'all want to eat lunch at? Baskin Robbins. You laugh. Why? Because sometimes you realize kids are not the best decision makers, right? Now, if you honored that, okay, yeah, well, that sounds great. Let's go have Baskin Robbins, you know. And they order one of those huge, what I don't, I can't remember what they call, Matterhorns or whatever. You know, it's got the you know, all the different, right? And they eat it and they throw it in the backseat of your car. Okay? What do parents do? Out of love. Saying no to something is not because you don't love. Saying no to something is because you do love. And so, but God saying no to certain things is not because he doesn't love, it's because he does love. And so when we begin to reframe the commandments, we reframe all this stuff that God's speaking to his people, it's not because of not loving, it's because of loving. Sometimes the cruelest thing a parent can do to a child is not set limits and set boundaries. I fully believe one of the biggest charges of parents and grandparents and those raising kids is to teach them the definition of one word, no. And by teaching people what the word no means, it makes them really good adults. It makes them be really good conscientious people and how they treat one another. But nevertheless, the people say, okay, Moses, you do this. And so here we have Exodus chapter 24, 7 through 8. Then he took the book of the covenant and read it in the hearing of the people. And they said, all that the Lord has said we will do and we will be obedient. You know, in other words, Moses says, okay, here's what God requires of us. And they say, okay, we'll do it. We'll do it. We're going to be obedient people. Then Moses sprinkled the blood of the covenant, the sacrifice they made. He sprinkled it on the people. He said, this is the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you. According to all these words, it was very important. And it goes back to the Garden of Eden. You remember Adam and Eve, they sinned. And they had a self-awareness and understanding after they sinned. And they were ashamed and they tried to hide themselves from God. And so they made little coverings. The old King James said aprons to cover, I guess, their bathing suit parts or whatever, you know, because they were ashamed. And God said, that's not adequate. That's not adequate. So God provided them skins of animals to cover themselves with. And from that point forward, there was an association between a person's sin and necessity for something to die. Some animal had to die. They didn't voluntarily give up its skin. It had to die to provide a covering for one sin. And so here we have the making of the covenant. Making the covenant was a God's agreement between, and something had to die to consecrate this covenant. So an animal was sacrificed. And the blood sprinkled upon the people. But the people said, we're going to do it. The 10, we got it. What God's recalling, and there's a lot of commentary on the 10, you know, after chapter 20. We're going to do it. We're going to do it, Moses. Just we've got this. We've got this. So God calls Moses back up on the mountain. And God says, okay, I'm going to give you this something a little bit more permanent. And so that's when Moses goes up to get the tablets of stone that God will inscribe the commandments into. There's something inherent in how God made us. We were made for connection. We were made in the image of God, the triune God, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. But we're also made for connection. When God created Adam, he says, it's good, it's very good. But then he says, but it's not good for man to be alone. We were created for connection. And part of the law giving was a way of connecting with God. It was a way for them to relate to God as not a punitive, but a loving father. Sometimes as children, we feel when we're being told, no, you don't love me.
you don't love me. We pout because we're told no.
But also there's something inherent within human nature is that we want a connection with God. In fact, you read Genesis not too long after Adam and Eve kicked out of the garden. What does man do? But they get together to build a tower to heaven because they want connection to God. Even if we cannot get it one way, we will try to connect, create it another way of doing it. If we can't get connection one way, we would try to create another way of doing it. Harry Harlow, in his studies of attachment many years ago, discovered that monkeys would go to great lengths to have an attachment to a fake monkey. He just put a terrycloth towel around them and discovered that when little monkeys are scared, they would begin to create an emotional bond to a fake monkey, a terrycloth-covered monkey. Even more so than the wire monkey that provided nourishment for it, that somehow in our ability to relate to one another, to make connection, God says, listen, man cannot live without connection. And if we cannot have it one way, we'll try to create it another way. So here's what happened. Moses goes up on Mount Sinai. God's going to give him the tablets of stone. And so while he's gone, remember, we just read, they said, we will do what God says to do. But why he's gone? They saw, well, it's taking him too long. Where's Moses at? It's taking Moses too long. Where's Moses at? So the people gathered to Aaron, this is Moses' brother, and said to him, come make us gods that should go before us. And as for this Moses, the man who brought us out of Egypt, we don't know what he became of him. So a few verses earlier, they're saying, we will follow God. We will do what he says. You know, Moses, just you go talk to him for us. We don't want God talking directly to us. It scares us. And so they say, okay. Then they come to Aaron after Moses been gone for a while. So listen, Aaron, why don't you make us something? Make us some gods, and we will follow them out of here. We'll follow them through the deserts. Make us something. Now, Aaron falls into the trap. He appeases the people. He didn't remind them of the first three. You know, no other gods before me, no graven images. You know, you don't do that. He falls into it. And as we talked a few weeks ago, again, they were faithless and fickle. They could not remain faithful. And they wanted God, but they didn't want God. And really what they were asking for was a counterfeit way of connecting to God. They could not, if you will, wait for God. We read this morning together, Isaiah 40:31. What, church? Say it together again. They that wait on the Lord. They couldn't wait. Isaiah said the people who can wait on God have something special waiting for them. But they couldn't wait. They wanted God to behave the way they wanted to behave. They wanted God to do what they wanted God to do. So while Moses is up there, the Lord said to him, go get down. I like this. For your people. It's sort of like parents when the kids messed up. Let me tell you what your child did. Okay. For your people, whom you brought out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. See, we don't need help. We mess ourselves up. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. It's like God said, did they not just say a few days ago they were going to follow me and do my bidding regardless? And they've made themselves a molded calf and worshipped it and sacrificed it. And they said, this is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt. Some have speculated why they made a calf. remember, we've been talking about, John and I both referenced it, when they left Egypt, they did not leave Egypt as paupers. They had wealth with them, great treasure they borrowed and took from the Egyptian people, and they had great treasure with it. In fact, the golden calf was made out of their jewelry. You know, Aaron says, give me your earrings and jewelries, and they gave it, and he fashioned the calf for them. And so one theory was is that the reason they chose a calf is because it sort of represented the oxen that may have pulled the carts that were so heavily laden with the stuff they were taking out of Egypt. It was like, you know. But God says, listen, Moses, they've already strayed. In fact, God is ready to wipe them out. God says, you know, I'm just going to destroy them all. And Moses says, please, God, don't. What are people going to say about you? You brought the people out in the wilderness to let them perish. And God says, well, I can start with you again, Moses. God could have chosen another people, he's saying, Moses. You see, God did not need their devotion to make himself bigger or more important. God wanted to bless them and keep them from a counterfeit faith and counterfeit connections. God wanted to save them from idolatry, not save them for idolatry. God wanted to save them for loving relationships, both in home, to honor your father and to honor your mother. God wanted to save them for relationships within community in which they cared for one another. They didn't take advantage of each other. They didn't lie. They didn't covet. In fact, when you read the commentary on the Ten Commandments from 20 forward, it's amazing the wisdom that God gave to these people and how to live with one another. I mean, just even in the text it says, if you have an ox and it knows to gore somebody, I mean, God was so specific that if you don't put your neighbor at risk of a mean bull. You take caution to protect him from that. Just in a very powerful way, God says, listen, how you relate to me matters, and how you relate to one another matters. And don't be counterfeit in this connection. Some of you may have seen this. This sort of blew my mind when I saw this. Does anyone know what the significance of 2617 is? I didn't, so I feel better now, but I didn't know. 2617. I'll give you a little hint. A study was performed by looking at smartphone users, and they found that the average user touched their phone 2617 times per day. Now, it did change. The younger people touched it more than the older people. Okay, but the top 10% of the people touched their phone 5,427 times, average number in the top 10. Now, that wasn't always looking at it. That was just holding it, touching it, moving it, carrying it, whatever. They put a little thing in the phone, and it measured every time it had been moved or handled or touched. What's that about? What's that really about? It's about the need for connection. It's about the need being connected to others, to the outside world, to other people. That's what that's about. There's an inherent human need to do this. In fact, another study Deloitte did said that the average person checked their phone an average of 46 times per day for messages. 46 times per day. And somebody say, well, I'm not average. I'm not doing that. Somebody say, well, is that all? You know, I've done that, you know, that many times since you start talking, you know. So what is this? But a way of connecting. In the same study that Lloyd said that 81% of the people in the survey said that they
kept their phone out during eating meals with other people. So, yeah, when I'm eating with other people, you know, in a few weeks, well, several months ago now, Tammy and I, we went out to eat Sunday afternoon after church, and there was a little, probably 8-year-old girl, and the mom and dad were at the table, and they all sat down. They weren't far from us. And the parent, both parents got their phone out, and they were talking, and the little girl was saying, "Why should I order?" And they go, "Shh, just look at the menu," you know. And she was begging for interaction. She was begging her parents, you know, "Pay attention to me, you know. Do you know?" And they were all, "Shh," and they were both. You see, that's counterfeit connection. And a lot of people assign meaning to those things. And it's a see if we can't get it genuinely in an authentic way, we'll find some other way to get it. God knows us. God knows how we're made. So when you put us all together, 8 billion times a day, we as Americans are looking at our phone. 8 billion times a day. It's inauthentic ways of connecting. 8 billion times a day. You see, the unimportant become urgent, and the insignificant sometimes matters. How many likes, or how many views? We struggle. Because if we can't get it in an authentic way, we'll find other ways of getting it. If we can't connect to God in authentic ways, we'll find other ways of getting it. If we cannot connect to each other in authentic ways, we find other ways of doing it. We do it. And God knew this is inherently man's problem. It wasn't enough that man lived in the garden with God. What was Satan's promise to Eve? Eat this fruit of wisdom and you'll be as wild. You won't need God. You'll be as God. You see, there's something within us that does this. And so, when we think about these foolish people who, I mean, they're physically seeing God's presence. The mountain's shaking, there's a thick cloud, there's thunderings, and I mean, and they say, "Okay, we'll do whatever you say, God. Just whatever you say, we'll do it. Just don't scare us anymore." And then they turn and create a graven image and worship and sacrifice it. The most authentic way of connecting they reject, and the most inauthentic way they choose. And we struggle the same. Psalms 103. "As a father pities his children, so the Lord pities those who fear him. For he knows our frame, and he remembers that we are dust." God knows what we're made of. God compassionately cares for us. He provides an authentic way of connecting. When Jesus was asked, "What is the greatest commandment you can do?" He goes back to the book of Exodus and says, "Love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. And love your neighbor as yourself." The same thing that God's trying to get to the point across here. You know, you don't put anyone else above me. And then when you relate to each other, you do it in an authentic, genuine way, not for lust. Not for covetousness, not for your own selfish needs. We struggle. "But the mercy of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting on those who fear him, and his righteousness to children's children, to such as keep his covenant and those who remember his commandments to do them." God's commandments were not to make us unhappy. God's commandments were to make us better. Better toward one another. In a real, genuine way, relating to him. Not in the counter, but in a real, genuine way relating to Him. Has there ever been someone in your life that you loved and respected so much, you cherished this person's love so much that you were good just because you did not want to disappoint them? Anyone ever happened to someone like that in your life? You were just good, you know, because you didn't want to disappoint them. I could do this, but I'd break my mama's heart, break my daddy's heart, break my grandma's heart, you know, break some. I could not live with myself if I broke their heart. That was the most healthiest form of human love, human connection. To not do something because it would adversely affect someone you loved. And that's what God is inviting them to do. To have a philosophy to say, I would rather die than to hurt my neighbor. I would rather give up personal freedoms than to dishonor my father and my mother. And God says, oh, by the way, when you start doing stuff like that, you're going to live a lot longer and be happier. You see, the commandments were not just a list of things not to do. The commandments were setting a foundation, as John says, from which we can live and grow and be meaningful in our connections in real authentic ways. Hillel was a great rabbi. He died about 10 years before Jesus was born, so he predated Jesus. And he was this sort of a really wise rabbi. We have a lot of his history and a lot of his writing. He helped with the Talmud, which is like the commentary on the Torah and the Old Law. And a Gentile came up to him one day and says, if you can explain the Torah, the law of God, to me, while I stand on one leg, I will become your disciple. So the Gentile was somewhat taunting him because, you know, there were a lot of folks had a lot to say about the law of God. But the Gentile says, okay, if while I'm standing on one leg, you can explain the Torah to me, I'll become your disciple. And this is what Hillel said. That which is hateful to you, do not do to your fellow. He said, that is the whole Torah. And the rest is explanation. Go and learn. Some people say, he says, more or less, the rest is just commentary. Go and learn. What's the wisdom of this man? It's a moral code. We talked about in the Sermon on the Mount that part of this was about a moral code. How you relate to one another. How you teach and relate to one another in a meaningful way. That which is hateful to you, do not do to your fellow, your neighbor. That's what God's getting at. The rest of the law, all those other chapters and verses and stuff like that, and the Torah, that's just commentary on this truth. Go and learn. So we're challenged. The whole point of the law was a moral one. How do we connect with God and with one another in the right way? What's it about? How do we connect to God, one another, in the right way? I remember several years ago reading a little article about it was a school board meeting in a state in the Northeast. And they had the school board voted on removing the Ten Commandments from all school property. That were separating church and state. That it went the Ten Commandments put in any schools. So they voted to remove the Ten Commandments from the schools. A later item on the agenda was a problem with discipline problems in school. You know, and so they were talking about, you know, they had a high rate of school violence and a lot of discipline problems in school. And they were talking about how to deal with it. And a parent raised their hand that was in the audience, and they said, and they called upon the parent, and the parent says, well, maybe a good suggestion was, you know, is that maybe we should be kind to one another. Maybe we should post, you know, things like we shouldn't hit each other. Maybe we shouldn't bully, you know. And they said, that's a great idea. And the person said, well, didn't we just vote earlier to remove those things from the schools? The idea that sometimes we need to be instructed in righteousness, instructed in right doing, and how we relate one another. As Hillel said, you know, that's the essence, and the rest is commentary. Now, I can't give the source for certain, but I want to attribute it to Darren Oliver. I think he's the one who sort of gave us this slogan we use for Nailing Church of Christ. If I'm wrong, someone can correct me, but I think it was Darren. But that Nailing Church of Christ, and we have it a lot of our brochures and stuff, loving God and loving others. And really, it should be more than just a slogan. It is a path to healthy connecting. Now, some of you may look at our church calendar for October and say, well, that's ridiculous. There's just too much going on. We provide a lot of opportunities for connecting in a lot of different ways. And that's part of demonstrating that we love God and loving each other. And then that love should go beyond the community and reach people in all of our areas of our lives. So the commandments were not God's list to make you unhappy. The commandments was God's list in order that you may have life and have it more abundantly. If you're here this morning, and maybe we can pray with you, maybe we can support you, maybe we encourage you, maybe you've had a sort of emotional response right where you're at. But Chris has chosen a song to lead for us right now, and if we're going to give you a space to respond, if we can help you. Chris, why don't you come up and lead us in the song? Why don't you stand so we sing this song?